Let's Talk Letts, an original podcast from the Lettings Hub.
Hello, and welcome to the latest episode of our podcast, Let's Talk Letts, the first one of season three. So very excited to be back. I hope you all had a fantastic Easter break. I'm Heidi, the CEO of the Lettings Hub, the tenant referencing business that got good at tech. Let's Talk Letts is our regular roundup of news and views on a whole range of subjects spanning the private rental sector. In this session, I'm absolutely thrilled to be joined for our next in our My Life in Lettings themed episodes of Let's Talk Letts with Christian Byfield, who is the founder of a multi-award winning lettings agency in East London and a tech pioneer and founder of The Depository. Great name. The Depository describes their service as looking after and automating the most thankless and boring tasks in lettings, checking out. And Christian is actually the first male we've had in this new regular feature of our podcast. And the relevance of this we will discuss shortly. But these features are all about being a nosy neighbour and learning everything about you. I'm also sure Christian won't mind me mentioning that he's from Iceland and he is very affectionately known as the Viking within our sector. So let's get started. Christian, thank you very much for joining us today. Please introduce yourself to all of our listeners and tell us a little bit more about your business too.
Heidi, well, first of all, thanks for having me. Pleasure to be opening season three and the first bloke as well. So that's lovely. As far as intros go, I think you've pretty much nailed it there. So Anne, my business partner, and I, we started our East London Lettings Agency base 20 years ago. About 4 years ago, we launched, as you said, The Depository, which is a software or SaaS product for letting agents and large-scale landlords, try and streamline that process. And I think like a lot of people prior to that, I started in agency, like so many people kind of fell into it. Fell into agency originally, really more around opportunity, and then discovered I loved it, and sort of 2 years after starting the industry, we started Base. So
excellent. Now I'm going to go back a little bit further than that, because I understand that being in lettings and being in prop tech wasn't your first career, and I understand in the early days you were actually an actor.
That is right, yes, for my sins. I originally set out to be a professional actor. Spent 3 years, much to the the bitter disappointment of my parents, who put me through private drama college for 3 years. I then graduated, was very lucky to land a show quite quickly. Got a really good lead role in a production of Ben Elton's Popcorn, whilst that was great, it kind of crystallized what a mistake I'd made, because we launched the show and I was lucky. A lot of my friends who still do 6-12 month contracts, I'd luckily only been signed on this show for 3 months, and 3 weeks into the run I kind of realized I'd made a bit of a mistake, and I wasn't enjoying being an actor. It wasn't going to be the career path for me. So literally within my first year of being an actor, I realised I didn't want to be an actor.
Okay.
And that was really where the pivot came. And like I said, like so many people had racked up quite a lot of debt being a student. And it was, like I said, it was very much just a case of, what is a job I can get into where there's decent earning potential, low barriers to entry, and hopefully I've got some sort of interest in. And I grew up in my family, we moved a lot. We would often buy dilapidated properties and move in and refurbish them and then move on after a few years. And my dad had a huge passion for architecture. So I was raised with a passion and an interest for property. So agency kind of made sense to try. And like I said, I took to it really quickly. I really liked it.
I don't actually think we've had a guest yet, not just in My Life in Lettings, but actually on the pod at all, that kind of left school or, as a young child, actually wanted a job in property. I think we've all ended up here by accident and then realised that actually we probably quite like it.
I think Megan 18 is the only person I know, because her mum was in property.
Okay.
And she very much raised that passion and that interest. And it's hilarious to see, because Megan's now doing it with her son Dexter. But I think you're right. I think Megan is the only person in my recollection who kind of always had their eyes set on being an estate agent, or particularly a lettings and property management person. It's rare.
We need to get into the careers offices at the schools and to tell them, you know, what a fantastic career it could be for all. But I just want to kind of go back to the point of being an actor, because we only met actually recently at the Women in Property or Women in Estate Agency conference. But obviously I've known who you are because you've got such a big personality, and it always seems that you want to have fun and you put yourself out there. And for your own personal brand, you always seem really happy, I suppose. Yeah. And so do you get that from, do you think when you were younger and, you know, some of the traits that you had and, you know, kind of skills from being an actor, have you always been like that? And has that helped you in your career?
I don't think it will shock many people that know me to come from, seem to know that I've never really been a wilting flower. So I think, you know, I think I was drawn to acting because I was very comfortable in that. But I grew up with my parents had me quite late in life. I had a much older brother and sister. I was, you know, my parents were kind of at a stage in their lives where they were like, we're not changing how we live our lives now. Like, so I would get dragged along to I'd get taken to a lot of adult dinner parties, and my dad's an artist. So, you know, we'd go to exhibitions either with his or friends or whatever. And I kind of, the ethos my parents raised me with was, look, you're welcome to mingle with our friends, but when you've had enough, you just take yourself off and entertain yourself. And so I think that I kind of grew up being made to feel comfortable talking around people far more experienced and far more intelligent than myself. And I think that kind of stood me in good stead. So, yeah, I think I kind of leant towards acting because, yeah, my personality was already kind of that way. You know, on your comments, yeah, I do consider myself a pretty positive, upbeat person. You know, we all have our battles and struggles in life. I am a true believer of, personally, I always find, you know, whenever I am facing something a bit difficult or something that people might find dragging down, I'm quite easily able to establish whether I have any control or responsibility over what's happening in my life. And if I don't have control or responsibility, I'm quite easily able to go, well, you know, we'll roll with it and we'll just find a way through it. And if it is something that's in my control, I tend to be someone who kind of takes action on that. So,
yeah, you've done a huge amount in your career building two different businesses. And as you have said, you've continued to be a positive person and a problem solver throughout. But what would you say has been your biggest high and your biggest low, if you could just pick one?
Probably if we were to pick out a singular highest moment, would probably be the 2016 Esters, which was the first time we won a Grand Prix, which is their UK awards. We'd up until that point, we've had a long-standing relationship with the Esters. I think we've entered it for 14 years now. We've been shortlisted 13 years in a row. 2016 was the first time we won a Grand Prix, but we actually won a Grand Prix award for the next six consecutive years. But that year, that first year, we had literally no expectation, and we'd never aspired to win a Grand Prix. You know, we'd always entered the Esters for one of really a couple of reasons. We wanted to make sure that our landlords and tenants were getting the service we thought they were. We wanted to benchmark ourselves against the agents that we love and admire out there in the industry and kind of see how we're doing against them. And from a competition basis, you know, really our East London patch, they've changed it. Sometimes it's north of the river, sometimes it's East London. But, you know, we wanted to hopefully challenge in our patch, and that was all we ever aspired to do. So, yeah, 2016 was definitely a standout because it was so unexpected. And I think that year we won, I think it was Gold Landlords Grand Prix and Silver Tenant Grand Prix. So, and to do the double whammy as well. And I think that was the first year they'd done the tenant category. And in terms of downsides, I'd probably pick out two. The first being, I would say, probably about a year after we launched Base. And Anne and I, our business relationship nearly fell apart. Primarily through just lack of communication. We weren't talking and being honest with one another. But thankfully, we very quickly got over that. I mean, we were very fortunate at the time. We had a friend who's a professional life and business coach who we were subletting part of our office to. And he kind of stepped in and was like, guys, there's no problem here. You just start talking to one another. So I'd say that was one. And then probably the other one would be last year when we were targeted by a right-wing media group over a rather saucy Pride. Well, actually, it was originally a Valentine's Day display, but we ran it through to a Pride. And then we got targeted by a very bigoted and homophobic right-wing group who targeted our business for about a month. Anne and I personally received death threats, and you know, I had phone calls from people saying, I know where you live, I know where you keep your car, and would describe me and what I typically wear on a day and quote my license plate or what type of car I drove. And
scary.
Yeah, it was terrifying at the time. But as is often the case with these bad things, a lot of good actually came out of it. You know, I think when you have events, I don't think a lot of companies have experiences quite like that. But when you have these kind of epic events within a company, I think it does one of two things. It either blows your company apart or it pulls everyone together.
Yeah.
And I'm very proud to say it really pulled our company together.
Yeah.
I think a lot of our staff felt Anne and I did an amazing job of protecting them and shielding them from what was going on. And likewise, you know, we felt very, very supported because there was early doors. There was a bit of guilt about, you know, whether we'd kind of overstepped the mark and been a bit silly and kind of called this on ourselves. And yeah, I think interestingly, they're probably my two standout things over the last 20 years. But off the back of resolving those was great things.
Yeah, I think it is, isn't it? It's like when events like that happen, it does make you question, I suppose, your values as a business and what you stand for, and is that important? And actually, do you stand for them because you really believe in them, or do you stand for them because actually that's kind of what's been said for a while? So I think it's, you know, when something like that happens, it's really shocking, and that, you know, that does sound totally terrifying. But it is a good moment, isn't it, to say no, you know, we believe in this. This is important to us, and we're not going to necessarily change. I also think it's interesting on your first example, because we've all been there at times where it feels a really dark place where someone that you really, you know, love working with, or you admire, or you know, you've got a lot of respect for and you really enjoy, that you feel that you're in a bit of a relationship breakdown. And actually that can feel really lonely and, you know, really like consuming, can't it, I think, at times. So to be able to work it out, I understand why that kind of comes up in your mind as a kind of pivotal moment too.
Well, I think it's one of those moments, you know, again, it was, you know, if we hadn't solved the problem, Depository would probably never have been created, and Base certainly wouldn't have really got where it's got to. And I think we would have missed out on a lot of the incredible experiences that we've had along that way. So yeah, in hindsight, it didn't feel like a big deal at the time because we did solve it very quickly.
Yeah.
But looking back on it now, you know, that really was make or break.
So let's go to the Depository then, because you obviously describe it as being the solution to the most thankless and boring tasks in lettings. But we know that they're actually really vital tasks and things that have to be done, and managing relationships with tenants and landlords, managing reputations, managing properties, and definitely closing out a tenancy and entering, so to get ready for a new one to start, is obviously vital. So where did the idea come from, and kind of what journey have you been on over the last few years with the business?
So look, I think importantly, Anne and I didn't sit down one day and go, right, do you know what, we need another business. you need to start another business and all this whole, this tech thing seems good, you know, and I'd kind of done some informal consultancy with some companies, but that you know, that wasn't the case. How we arrived at this was as an agency. So one thing that we do every year is we kind of pick apart the business, and we very much rely on our team to do that. So we will spend half or pretty much all of the day, and we will sit down with every team member individually and have a kind of one-to-one chat with them about how's their year been. You know, what have they loved doing? What haven't they loved doing? You know, what's the favorite part of their job? If there was one part of their job we could get rid of, what would it be? We do that, and then we come together as a team and we discuss what's come out of those discussions. And back in 2016, what unanimously came back to us from every single member of the team was how broken and turgid and fractious the Townsea conclusion process is. And I think particularly in our agency, we've always aspired and typically achieved to have a really good relationship with our tenants, with our residents throughout their stay with us. But again, another element that came out of it was not just the workload, but we found the psychology of it quite fascinating, where we would have tenants stay with us for 3, 4, 5, 6 years. They'd refer friends to come and rent with us. They might even move to another property with us. But the moment we started that checkout process, it'd be like, oh, here we go.
Yeah.
They'd be like, what do you mean, here we go? They'd be like, yeah, you've been great till now, but it's end of tenancy time. This is where you're going to rinse us, isn't it? And that kind of hurt. You know, that kind of hurt a bit. It was like, but not always, not every letting agent is always looking for some angle to stitch you up. And so, and it pretty much crystallized itself in that very moment. It was like, right, okay, you know, there's something to work on here. And then the more we drilled down into it, you know, then we looked at the tenant journey, and tenants often at their own fault, because some agents or a lot of agents are really good at sending out guides and documentation about the end of tenancy process. The sad truth is most tenants don't bother reading it. But I think a lot of tenants, and often because they've had at least one bad experience somewhere along the way, or they know someone who's had a terrible experience, they're not usually aware of how well protected they are, but they're not usually all that aware of their responsibilities, and they don't really understand the process. And so we felt, you know, coming at it from, right, this is going to be a product we build for agents, right, that's simple, there's a lot of value add we can do there. But then we looked at tenants and we were like, this is the worst bit of renting for tenants as well. And so if we can turn that from the worst bit to an all right bit, you know, I don't think we've ever aspired to make it like the best bit.
The best bit, yeah.
I think that would be a little bit ambitious. But like I said, the more we looked at it, and then, you know, and then we looked at the landlord journey. Landlords are often pretty unclear on what the legal framework is about what they can legitimately claim for deductions. And then we started talking to the deposit schemes, and they were like, oh, you know, we've got certain issues, out of date tenancy or tenant contact details, and being, when it came to disputes, being overwhelmed by agents or landlords just dumping every piece of evidence and documentation because they didn't want to miss something.
Yeah.
And so the more we looked at it, the, you know, the bigger the picture became, and it became very, very clear that there was something we could do here. And but again, we went out then and we were like, right, what's out there? And there was nothing out there. And then, you know, I've got good relationships with a lot of the CRMs, so I would reach out to CRMs and go, look, is this something you guys are looking at improving or kind of developing? And pretty much the flat response from everyone was, absolutely not. No, we've not. And that was it, really. And so, you know, that was where the idea of the depository was born. At the time, we were a TDS agent, but I had absolutely no relationship with the senior board at TDS. I'd never met any of them. And I very cheekily just looked up the executive board's emails, and I sent an email, I think, to Steve, the CEO, totally out of the blue, totally cheekily, no relationship at all. And I think it was literally a 2 or 3 paragraph email saying that this is who we are, this is the kind of idea we've had, and would you be interested on working, you know, collaborating with us on something like this? and much more amazing, man. I think I can't remember if it was same day or next day, but I literally had an email back from Steve going, sounds fascinating, let's meet. And we literally sat down a week later in London with Steve and Nick, and at the time Ben Beadle, who headed up TDS Northern Ireland, who many will now know as the CEO of NRLA. And yeah, what was brilliant, as I already highlighted in the conversation, because they could see value to them as well as value to what we were trying to do to the process. And you know, they were hugely supportive, and that was great.
How did the business get its name?
So very much, I kind of took a run seal approach to the name, which was, you know, I did think, do we go for some sort of trendy tech name? You know, do we go for something at random? Or at the time, it was very trendy to do words without the vowels in. So, you know, do we do something like moving, just MVNG or something like that? And then I was a bit like, well, look, at the end of the day, it's an operational product. You know, we're never under any illusions. Our product is not a sexy product. It's not a product that we're going to walk into an agent's office and you're going to get people literally kind of fizzing in their seats about, oh, you know, we're not going to bring them new instructions. We're not going to boost their revenue. And so I think we felt it made a lot more sense that we did a product that kind of does what it says on the tin.
Yeah.
Than trying to be clever about it. And I think, you know, probably not dissimilar when you guys were coming up with the Lettings Hub for referencing. It's like, you know, you could come up with something completely left field. But ultimately, why? If your name kind of already hints at what you do, then you've already done part of the marketing battle.
Part of the job. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was it, really. And I think, you know, when we were developing the name and since we've launched, we've had countless little jokes about what our name sounds similar to. To which my response is, I don't care. It's making our name stick in your mind. And as we all know in marketing, number one is make sure they don't forget your name.
Yeah. Memorable, if nothing else. Excellent.
Exactly.
And obviously your history in lettings, of course, got to have helped you with that business. In terms of credibility, talking to your customers now or anybody else, how has that really genuinely helped the business?
Look, I think massively in that this won't come as a surprise to any letting agent or estate agent watching this. We've all been presented with a lot of tech, which sounds great, maybe even looks great, but actually, and all too often, this discovery happens after you've signed a contract and you're actually using the platform. You suddenly realise that the nuances of running a lettings agency and running your own lettings agency suddenly becomes quite complicated, because these funny little things which you think are normal all of a sudden become impossible. And then you start being told things like, oh, you can cheat the system by doing this, and oh, you have to change that. And I think, you know, we also really understood from the get-go as a letting agent, way you structure your operation is very much part of your identity as a business. The way you choose to facilitate your operations, those special little steps that to some big software company is like, yeah, but just change it. Yeah, but I've gone out and told my customers for years that we specifically do that funny little thing because it makes sure this doesn't happen. That was going to have to be a huge part of our product. And that is the complexity of what we've built. Is on the surface, our platform looks quite clean and simple from a user perspective, and that's absolutely what it should be. But from a back-end perspective, we're constantly adding new settings and features and configurations that you can do. I mean, there's something stupid like over 100,000 permutations of settings on our platform you can have according to how you want a business to work with, what partners you have and everything. I think that's been invaluable. And I think that, you know, we see that day in, day out in the demos that we do, in the training we deliver, and in the support we give once a client goes live, is that I would say 90%+ of the demos we do, at the end of the demo, there will be a comment in there somewhere along the lines of, you can tell you guys do this for a living.
A good accolade. So any regrets so far?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think, you know, regrets are always a tricky thing, because, you know, as the old saying goes, hindsight's always 20/20. You know, I don't think there's regrets. There's things we've learned in terms of, I think, you know, like so many, I think we were naive about how much it was going to cost to build.
Yeah.
We were naive about how long it was going to take. But actually, in hindsight, if we'd known all of that stuff at the offset, we might not have done it.
Yeah, sometimes it's good to be blind. Sometimes it's good to be blind to things like that, isn't it?
Exactly. And we took what we felt was the right thing for us, but also felt like quite a brave step at the time, to be completely self-funded. Coming back to the point we just talked about, actually, we knew that the success of this would be on the quality of the product. And a lot of the quality would come through that back end, that the array of nuances that sit behind the platform. And I think we knew that if we took money too early in our journey, that would be compromised. Because the moment you take money, you're held to these typically very aggressive growth deadlines and growth and sales targets and team targets and all this sort of stuff. We took the pretty scary decision to fund it ourselves. And you know, we thought we'd be live within a year. It took us 3 years to get the product to where we wanted to. We finally went live 7 days before COVID lockdown was announced.
Wow.
So, you know, we've been going 4 years, but in reality, I really consider it more like 3 years, because that first year was pretty much a write-off. Thankfully, we signed two small agents in that first week, so we had someone to work with. But we very quickly had to go from, right, we were geared up to sell, to, right, we're now just going to need to be nice and chatty and supportive. And because how can I sell to an agent when, you know, there's questions over the future of the human race in those early days, let alone
whether
our agency offices.
Yeah.
No. So, yeah.
Brilliant. Now, I obviously mentioned earlier that you are the first gentleman that we've had on this feature, My Life in Lettings. And this isn't deliberate, but it is really important to mention, because back in March, we met at the Women in Estate Agency Conference. And as the title suggests, this is an event aimed at women. And the reason that it is important today is pretty much because women are underrepresented in the property sector. That's a bit of a shame based on the talent that they could bring. However, we know that gender parity will not be achieved by one gender alone. As females in our sector, we definitely need our male counterparts, particularly those with influence and a platform to support this change. In a recent podcast that we did with Jo Bourne, so she's obviously one of the phenomenal women behind the Women in State Agency movement, she told me that men sometimes say that the conference, where men are obviously in the minority, get the opportunity to see firsthand the discomfort that women often feel in the sector. How did you feel being at the event? What was it like to be one of obviously the only few men there? And why did you choose to go?
Yeah, look, I've always felt quite passionately about equality and parity, not just, obviously, I've got a woman as a business partner, but I'm also very proud of the fact she's part of the LGBTQ community. And so that's always been a big part in our business. And I think being London-based as well, there's obviously that huge multiculturalism. So that's always run through our business as kind of the norm for us. But I love what WIEA stands for. When they announced the first conference last year, I mean, I instantly wanted to be a part of it. But when they announced the tickets, I actually messaged some of the guys and was like, is it, am I allowed to buy a ticket? Is that okay? Because I wasn't really sure. And the very resounding message was, of course, you know, this is, you know, for our allies, but also for those wanting to kind of educate themselves and maybe reframe their own psychology around it or their business structure around that. But I was so blown away by the event last year. It was so refreshing in so many ways, not just its primary agenda, but the feel and the content was phenomenal, and it really stood out for me. It was only going back this year, it was great this year that we were able to kind of take a step up and become a sponsor of the event this year as the depositories, and that really meant a lot to us. But yeah, this year's was fantastic. I have to say, I don't, what's the word, align with that kind of, personally, with my mentality of feeling uncomfortable in a room that was female dominated. I think again that to me raises some interesting questions about the psychology of it overall. I think it was definitely nice and refreshing to be in a room that was women dominated, and it definitely changed the dynamic. But although it is women in a state agency, it's not an estate agency conference.
Yeah, it could be.
It's a women in the professional workplace conference.
Yeah.
Anyone from any industry in any sector could have sat in their conference. That in itself is really refreshing. And I can't wait. I've already got the date in for next year. We will absolutely be a sponsor again next year. It's brilliant. And if you haven't been, whether you're a man or a woman, if you haven't been, make sure you go next year. Because it is enlightening, you know, and it will just make you reframe your thoughts about certain things. And you know, like I said, we've always considered ourselves a very modern business in that respect, and a very equal business. But still coming away from the two conferences, all of us, but me especially, are still coming away going, we really need to be thinking how we support that within our business. And yeah, there's always something to learn from and take.
Yeah, and it's a good refresher, I think, isn't it, to have in the back of your mind all the time as just reminders of things that were said on the day, things that you learned, things that you heard, things that you read, and just kind of how some people really shared their experiences of how they felt, and how you obviously really wouldn't want anyone in your team or friendship group or family feeling like that. And I definitely kind of, you know, came away talking to my daughters. They're too young to attend. The oldest one's only 11. But, you know, I was like, oh, I wish in one way you'd been there. And you know, if it was a few years on, I would take them to something like that. They didn't need to know anything about property or the sex at all. It was I think it was a really educational event, and everyone was hugely supportive. So before we finish, just to get back to you and your profile within the industry, which is obviously huge, part of what keeps you very real is that you also talk about your life as a tenant and how that's influenced your desire to support the private rented sector.
Yeah, so I mean, I've been renting in London since I left school. So what would that be? Since 1998. And yeah, I think, you know, on that journey, I mean, the last 10 years I've lived in one of my clients' properties. The letting agent's all right. But prior to that, you know, worked with lots of different landlords, lots of different agents. I think I probably lived in about 8 properties before the one we're in now. And yeah, I think as an agent, we always set out to deliver as best as we can the kind of parity of service between our owners and our residents, or our landlords and our tenants. So, and I think part of that is because I was a tenant, but part of it had nothing to do with that. And again, just coming back to really kind of what we were just talking to about, just being nice people and just being considerate and empathetic. And
well, you know, this year's tenants is, you know, potentially next year's landlords, isn't it, in reality?
Well, look, they all go on to do something, right?
Yeah,
they're you know, they're either going to be a tenant forever, and you need a tenant to be in a property to be getting the rent to get your fees, and they might eventually convert into a home buyer at some point, so that's your mortgage and a sale, and at some point they might become an investor, which is multiple ones of those. And I think I always find it fascinating. From a business perspective, I always, regardless of what a business or a person felt or thought about a tenant, from a business perspective, I never understood why on earth a company would feel, and particularly larger businesses, would feel comfortable giving someone a toxic representation of your company's brand at the start of their property journey.
Yeah.
You know, why on earth would you want to make someone in their early 20s hate your brand for the rest of their life?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, do you know
60
what?
Years of selling, 60 years of opportunity to do business with that person, and because you treated them like crap to make a few extra hundred quid, when they were 20 years old, you miss out on potentially tens or even hundreds of thousands of pounds of revenue. Just bonkers.
And we're going to have to wrap up now, but do you know what? I think if you ever leave that house that you've lived in for the last 10 years, you will probably have a very good checkout experience. Now, for all of our guests that we have on Let's Talk Let's, before we go, we don't let you go until you have shared with us a funny story or anecdote that has happened to you over the years. Have you got a good one for us?
I mean, there's probably the anecdote of how my previous agency role came to an end, which was Anne and I were working at an agency. We worked at an agency which gladly no longer exists. It taught us a few things about what we could do, but a lot of things about what we shouldn't do. And unfortunately, the boss who started off being very dynamic ended up being an outright crook. And I've never been particularly good at keeping my mouth shut when I feel someone's really in the wrong. So I'd already made my feelings quite clear with him in the offices in front of quite a few members of staff. But the final nail in the coffin for my job was that we came to the Christmas party and the owner took us out this big swanky evening to the restaurant that he just opened, which incidentally he basically rented and fitted out using landlords' rent and deposits. And I proceeded to get very drunk and then throw food at him across the room.
Oh.
Calling him every name under the sun. And so I think that's probably no regrets. I don't regret a single thing I said. I think the only thing I regret is that I got so drunk I don't remember some of the things I said to him.
Yeah,
so you wish reactions.
Maybe you wish you had, yeah, exactly, the satisfaction of seeing it.
But I don't regret what I did. I don't regret what I did at all. And Anne and I still laugh about it. Terence, our senior, our head of property management, actually worked with us back at that time as well. We were all at that. So quite often at the base Christmas party, that story will usually come up about me flinging food across the table at the owner and hurling a lot of abuse at him while quite openly talking about the fact that who cares, because we're starting our own agency anyway. Probably that one.
Okay, so thank you so much. And I'm sure whatever's next for you in your life, in lettings, is going to be hugely successful. You never know. If we're running this pod in another 10 years, we can have you back and you can tell us the next kind of decade of stories. So thank you so much. But for all of our listeners, to make sure you never miss an episode of Let's Talk Let's, please follow us on Spotify or wherever you listen to your podcast. Please leave us a review. And thank you very much for listening. And thank you to you, Christian.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been really good fun, Heidi.
Let's Talk Let's, an original podcast from the Lettings Hub.